All right, the recorder is on. And page 134, is that what I said? Yep, page 134. We're in NTI Luke chapter 5, and we're going to start with verses 17 to 26. And this is what we have. Again, I tell you, you will find doubt in your mind. Even as I show you that you are worthy of love, by loving you through myself and into your heart, a thought will rise within your mind that says, I am not worthy of this love. It is love that must be illusion, for I am an abomination. This is yet another spot rising to the surface to be healed. So give this thought to me. Let my light shine upon it. I am asking you to pick up your mat and walk. This is the task at hand. And to do this, you must be willing to leave your doubt behind. This is why I tell you that there will be doubt. So when you see it, you can say, ah, yes, there it is, just as I was told it would be. And you can remember that the authority given faith, Dave, is stronger than the authority presumed in doubt. So funny, that's the conversation we were having just before we sat down. Lay your doubt aside, trust in my words, and walk with me. So again, he is promising us that we will experience doubt. And he says the reason we will experience doubt is because the doubt is rising up to be healed. Again, that's one thing we want to remember whenever any of this yucky stuff comes. It's not that, you know, what the ego wants to say is I'm bad for thinking this, for feeling this, or somehow I've slipped backwards. I was in peace and now I'm in doubt and, you know, something's gone wrong here. And what he is trying to train us to realize is it doesn't mean something's gone wrong. In fact, it's actually moving forward. It's a healing process. In order for things to heal, they have to rise up. And of course, in miracles, Jesus tells us that we don't know our retreats from our advances. And that's because in our little limited perspectives, when we're at peace and joyful, we think, oh, I'm doing good. And then when the crap comes up, we think, oh, I slipped backwards. You know, I'm doing bad again. But he's saying that's not true. And Jesus does too. We don't know our retreats from our advances. In this case, these things are rising up to be healed. So as you go further in NTI, you will find that what Holy Spirit coaches us to do to the best of our ability is actually to rejoice. When the crap shows up, rejoice, because it's coming up to be healed. And I eventually learned to do that. I eventually learned there was like a pre-agitation that would show up, even before whatever was really going to show up showed up. You know, almost like a PMS, like a pre-agitation. And I would start noticing that at least the girls know what I'm talking about.
Spiritual PMS.
A spiritual PMS.
Pre-agitation
syndrome. There you go. I would start noticing it, and I thought, oh, something's coming. I can feel it. And I learned to be happy. Like, I don't know what's coming. Something's coming. I can feel it's coming, but I'm happy it's coming because I know it's coming to be healed. So I learned to celebrate that instead of feeling like, oh, no, I'm slipping backwards. I'm doing bad again.
You can tell I don't like it.
Yeah. Well, my friend Cheryl Valentine, I think, heard me say this enough times, too, that she said she has also now, she's learned when she feels that we never use the word pre-agitation. That came out tonight for the first time. But she's learned to feel when it's coming on, and she's learned to be happy and welcome it and rejoice. And that's really what Spirit is coaching us to do. And, of course, again, in A Course in Miracles, Jesus asks us to be the happy learner. And you can see how this coaching is trying to help us to be that. Because basically we're going through this process. We're all here. We're going through this process. We can go through this process as easily as possible, or we can go through this process in a more difficult way. And what he's trying to do is teach us how to go through it in the easier way, kind of the attitude to have while we're going through the process.
So if you identify a pattern, you know, that you haven't seen before and all of a sudden something shows it to you, I don't understand how you heal it.
Okay, so I'm going to just repeat what you said for the recording. So if you identify a pattern you haven't seen before, and then
right.
something shows it to you,
right.
you're saying, I don't understand how I heal it.
Right.
Yeah, and the best answer, just without having any specifics, the best answer is one way that you allow something to heal is simply by being aware of it in a non-attached, non-distressed way, recognizing with your willingness that it needs to be healed and trusting that it will be.
Okay, so you don't really have to do anything.
No, you don't have to do anything. That's why the healing is called a miracle. It's more of a don't do things. You know, like before, most of our patterns, we had some kind of defense mechanisms in place. We had some kind of, a pattern to match the pattern. You know, like every time I saw a certain train coming, there was a certain way I always reacted to try and avoid it, right? A defense pattern. What we want to do is stop our defense pattern and let that train go ahead and come.
And recognize it and acknowledge it
and say, I recognize this needs to be healed. I'm willing to let this be healed. I trust it's being healed. I'm surrendering here. I'm letting go here. It's a hands-off as a general rule. Again, that's without any specifics, but you'll find that the nice thing about learning the process of healing or the process of forgiveness is it's really only one process, and it just repeats the same process for different things as they come up. So it's not like you have to meet everything with a different skill set. You learn the one forgiveness skill set or one, healing skill set, which in your case is more just being aware and doing nothing and trusting, right? And then things are healed over and over again through that one set. And again, the rest, accept, and trust is a good little reminder of what your job is. Okay, so let's look then at verses 27 to 32. Remember that you are sick and I have come to heal. Remember all that I say, that healing may be ushered in now. Now here's what he wants us to remember whenever, again, the ego is getting loud for us in whatever way it does. You are worthy. Do not let doubt tell you that you are not. Feel grateful for your willingness. It will herald all healing for you. Sickness must be seen to be healed, so show your sickness to me. But do not forget that it is only sickness, and through your rest I come to heal. So see the symbol he's using? You're sick, so you need to rest, right? So we're not really the ones doing the healing. We're the ones resting. We're the ones trying to just relax as much as possible, not get involved with whatever's there, and allow the healing to happen. So you can't even use that symbol of imagining yourself sick. I'm physically sick now. And so what I'm going to do is just lay here and rest and let Holy Spirit take care of this. And I say lay here and rest, and certainly there were times when I didn't, but there are many times that that's exactly what I did. I retreated to the bedroom and I laid there and rested. Because whatever was going on was so strong that if I had interacted with people, it wouldn't have been good. I'll just put it that way.
The agitation and the fear is going to be seen.
So there are times that you definitely need to retreat and be alone, and that's okay.
The other thing that I found effective, after you see it and you're aware of it, and you're just letting it be healed, I kind of say it a little prayer, and then I say, and I trust it will be done.
Okay, so Ruby is saying, again, I'm repeating for the recording, that one thing that's helpful for her is that she says, I trust it will be done. I trust the Holy Spirit.
I trust the Holy Spirit. It will be done.
It'll be done.
I trust the Holy Spirit. I trust.
Yeah, I think trust is huge.
See, I have a problem. like yes. he kept repeating it. I couldn't grasp how that would heal. I think you need to do something else.
Yeah, so you were thinking that you know what? Okay, I'm going to repeat what Kathy said, and then I'm going to... Kathy was referring to a time when I was with Laurent, whatever his name is, Laurent, and there was an apparent rejection. And the Holy Spirit taught me to say that it's not Laurent that's hurting me, it's my own belief in my own rejectability. Hold on. And Kathy was saying the feeling in the mind was... That's not enough. I got to do something else. That's ego.
Okay.
That's ego. And if you realize that ego is the belief that I am this alone person here, and if anything is going to be okay in my realm, I have to take care of it. And so, you know, you can even feel that. There's got to be something that I have to do here. In other words, it's really not trusting that there is, you know, whatever you want to call it, God, Holy Spirit, universal healing energy, you know, whatever name you put on it. It's just not even really trusting. It's thinking, I have to do something. I have to do something. And what we're really doing here, we're not just letting go of beliefs in rejectability and beliefs in unworthiness and all of that. We're letting go of ego. Ultimately, that's what we're doing. So we're letting go of the belief in I am this person. And there's no way that I can do that. It's never going to happen. The more you exercise that I by saying, I have to fix this, I have to fix this, you're actually strengthening that I that needs to be let go of. The only way to let go of that I of the ego is not to exercise it, not to use it. So if you understand what you're really doing, that you're letting go of this false belief about who you are, and you understand that the only way to do that is by letting it weaken through lack of belief, lack of exercise, lack of use, then you understand how doing nothing heals. Right?
Yeah, and Luke chapter 5 from the very beginning, like start to 1, looking at your situation, it says...
She knows. She lives with you.
Things are not as they seem. Things are not as they seem.
Things are not as they
seem. We think that we could work on it or something. Things are not as they seem. This is why I ask you to trust me and follow me. I know how things are.
Yeah, things are not as they seem.
You are blind to these facts.
Yes.
So that's why you need to step back and... That's why I need
you. Yeah.
Well, the ego loves 10 steps to release your rejectability, right?
Yeah. So again, you know, A Course in Miracles, of course, uses the term forgiveness, which can be confusing for a lot of people because we already had a definition of forgiveness, right? And so that makes it difficult to transition. But in NTI, forgiveness isn't used as often. The term that is used more often is letting go. Letting go. Letting go. It's a letting go process. And, you know, so it, you know, it's a complete relaxing and letting things leave you. You know, letting go. Yeah. All right, so again, he's telling us, remember, we are worthy of healing, because this is another story that we'll hear in the mind that somehow, you know, I'm the greatest loser, and we're not talking about weight here, like in the show. I'm the greatest loser, and, you know, everybody else in this circle can heal, but not this one, not me. And he's saying that's just not true. You are worthy, and again, just return your attention to your willingness and focus on your willingness. Because your willingness will herald all healing for you. So verses 33 to 39. Old habits must be let go, for old habits will not usher in a new day. With old habits, all things remain the same, but with new habits, all things are possible. I have come to teach you new habits. You will learn these habits by practicing them as I ask. Remember me in practice. You will catch yourself practicing the old habits, for this has been your way until now. Slipping into old habits does not ruin the new ones. So when you find yourself doing this, forgive yourself your attraction to the old by stepping away from the old and stepping into the new. Each time you do this, you help yourself to unlearn the old and to learn the new. Take no old habits with you into the new, for the old habits must be left completely if the new habits are to result in new. All right? So, you know, one example might be, well, I'll tell you one of the things that I'm working on right now. One thing that apparently has been important to me is that people understand my intention. You know, so if I say something to you, and this is true, obviously, of my ego. I mean, you know, even though it sounds very nice, it's I have a nice ego. Not all egos are bad. Not every characteristic. So if I, typically, all my life, if I do something for someone, in my case, it is not coming from malice. I am always well-intentioned. The result may not turn out well, but the intention behind it is always well. And so what happens for me sometimes is that the intentions are interpreted differently by the other person. And then I want them to know, no, this is what I meant, right? So, and one friend in particular in the last year, you know, there's been several times when she's misunderstood my intentions. And I found that I was really trying too hard to show her what I meant and to show her that I loved her. And that's when I realized this was something I had to let go of. And so I'm still in the process of letting go of it. And so what this means is, you know, I could say something to one of you guys, and you could say something back where it could become apparent to me that you totally misunderstood me. My old habit, okay, would be to then try and show you that you misunderstood me. He says the old habits have to be let go. Because, you know, that's really my way of maintaining my nice ego. And I want to be seen as nice. That's what the nice ego wants. So now what I'm trying to practice is if I say something to one of you all and it becomes apparent that you misunderstood, I just let you keep that. I just let you keep it, yes.
So you're going to let us misunderstand what's being said here?
Well, that might be different. I'm talking on a personal basis.
Okay.
Yeah, on a personal basis. Yeah, that might be different. That, you know, the guidance will take care of it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You got me. Yeah, that, yeah. I can't speak for when I'm in the flow of teaching because that's kind of different, to be honest. But on a personal basis, and that may not even last forever. There may come a point where, you know, it's healed and then I'm able to let people know, oh, no, I didn't mean that because it's coming from a different place. Sometimes, you know, you can't go by the outer. But I know that right now it's important for me, letting go of my ego, that I let go of trying to convince you of what I meant, right?
The course is lots if I defend myself, I'm attacked.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And so another thing he says now, when you receive this guidance to change a habit, whatever your habit is, when you receive the guidance, he says, you're not going to start doing it perfectly. You can't say, okay, so starting right now, I'm never going to correct people again about what my intentions were. Because you know what? Your habits are so ingrained. So what's going to happen probably, if you're normal, and I think most of us are, is, you know, somebody will misunderstand you if you're using the same story, and you'll start to correct them. And then you realize what you're doing. And so then you need to back out of it, you know? So it's kind of a starting the old habit, remembering, and then immediately going into the new habit. And he says this is how the new habit becomes ingrained. So again, we need to allow ourselves that reasonable room for error in the learning process without judgment. So, you know, Danielle says something. I say, oh, no, Danielle, that's not what I meant. I meant this, this, that I think. And she says, well, I think. And I go, okay, maybe you're right. See? Just shift back and drop it. So he wants us to be gentle with ourselves, allow ourselves the transitions, catch our errors without judgments, correct ourselves as quickly as possible, and understand that, again, it's not always immediate. Peace Pilgrim said it took a long time for the living to catch up with the believing. And what she meant by that, even though she's using the word believing, is that she knew she needed to do these things, but sometimes it took a little bit of time for that to come into action because of the old habits, the old conditioning.
And that was a good thing. Well, that's one of the things that I had to let go. And what I called it, like the defense, and I love that Course in Miracles thing about the defense. But it was like let going of explaining. You're trying to explain. When I start trying to explain something like that,
it makes it worse.
Yeah. And you kind of know when you're in that mood. I mean, you know you're.
Well, another thing about the path, at least the way I'm experiencing, I'm not going to say this is true for everyone because it's different for everyone actually, but for me, one thing comes up to be healed, it's healed, and then something else, and then it's healed, and then something else, and then it's healed. So, you know, I mean, there are periods where it seems like there's breaks where nothing's coming up to be healed, and that's okay too, but then something else comes. And until the healing happens that makes everything fall away, you know, we can just kind of expect that. And just remember that with each healing, there's going to be more joy, more peace, more clarity, and just learn to be happy and do your best. I mean, that's really what we're being asked to do here.
Yeah, and I think what really helps me out tremendously is from the Inner Ramada book, like in between the judgment of myself, of correcting myself, instead of just making the correction, I ask myself a question, how shall I be now?
How shall I be now?
And it just makes it a much smoother transition.
Yes.
It takes the responsibility off of me, and then it just comes in.
Yes, yeah, so you're turning to guidance
right.
on how to be in that moment.
Yeah, and then I can make the right choice.
And then you can make the right choice, good. All right, so that's the old habits, and that takes us to NTI Luke chapter 6, verses 1 to 11. Judgment is a way of looking at the world and deciding what is good and what is bad, or what is right and what is wrong. You have been taught within the world how to exercise your judgment so that it is good judgment. For even judgment itself can be good or bad, right or wrong. Now, I ask that you forget everything you have been taught and everything you have learned. For if you know nothing, you cannot judge. Any judgment that you make and accept as a belief in your mind is a mistake. For any judgment that you make assumes something within illusion is real, and within its realness, something is better or more valuable than something else. Judgment accepts as real and then separates. So all judgment must be of the ego. Now, later when we get to NTI Romans, NTI Romans teaches that judgment is the building block of illusion. And in fact, it even defines judgment as decision-making, because we do think of judgment as like saying it's good or bad or right or wrong. But even if we are using our thinking mind to decide, what am I going to do today? You know, and we're weighing the options and looking at all the opinions. What we don't realize is we're making judgments. We're saying, okay, well, this is something I'd rather do. This is better for me. This is worse for me. And we're making judgments. And then we make a decision. And what he's really asking us to do is to learn to let go of that process completely. And lots of people will say, you cannot live in the world without judgment. But that is not true. Because what you have within you, whether you call it guidance or whether you call it intuition, what you have within you is you could even call it another type of judgment if you want, but you have within you is something that will tell you what to do in every situation without you thinking about it, without you weighing options, without you knowing or thinking you know what's in your best interest or what's not in your best interest. And a big, big part of this spiritual path is learning to find that intuition in you. Some people call it the still, quiet voice. Learning to find that intuition in you and just learning to get better and better and better at listening to it. And, you know, one of the great examples is if you think of two radio stations, typically when we start a spiritual path, we're totally tuned into ego, or W-E-G-O, right? And then over here, there's this other radio station, which the Course in NTI would call Holy Spirit, or we could call it W-G-O-D. And what you want to do when you're over here on W-E-G-O, you can hardly hear W-G-O-D. But you're going to start tuning this way. And at first, you know, even when you start to hear it, it's going to be so faint, you're going to be so unsure that you even hear it, right? But you just keep tuning that way, and eventually what happens is it's actually stronger than ego as you get closer and closer and closer to that station. And so that's the main thing we're doing. Using Jacqueline's example from either last week or the week before when you talked about going to buy the piece of furniture, and the thoughts entered your mind that maybe the person was somehow going to harm you when you went to their home. And remember, the first question I asked her was, there anything in you that was telling you to go ahead and look at that furniture? And she said, well, yes. You see, so that's really all you need to do is learn which voice to listen to and which voice not to. The loud, fearful voice was W-E-G-O. The little, still, quiet voice saying, you know, just go. That was W-G-O-D. Now, the problem is, in this world, this lifetime, and probably in all the others, whatever, I don't know anything about previous lifetimes, but assuming they're there, okay, we have always been taught to listen to the head, the thinking, the fear voice. And now that we're on the spiritual path, we're being taught to listen to another voice that we're not even quite sure how to listen to. We may not have any evidence in our life yet that we can trust it, right? And so that's one of the greatest challenges that we undertake. However, there isn't one of us that doesn't have this voice, and there also isn't one of us who hasn't listened to it at least somewhat, and therefore has some experience with it. Now we actually want to become masters at listening to this voice. You could say we want to become master followers. That's what we want to do. And it will get you through everything. It will guide you in what to put on in the morning when you're getting dressed, what to pick off of a menu. You know, for me, when I look at a menu, I scan the menu with my eyes, but always something just, I don't know how to say it, it just like pops. Like that's the thing, you know? And occasionally, usually I just go with that, but occasionally my mind will say, I think I'd rather have this, but yet I can just feel, no, that's the thing. Why? I don't know. You know, and lots of people, especially course students, you know, again, course students are funny. I don't know why, but they are. I'm not quite sure what happened. Because The Course is a great book. But you know, but course students will say, you know, well, Holy Spirit won't tell you what to eat. Or Holy Spirit won't tell you what to wear. Holy Spirit doesn't care about the illusion. Well, they're right about Holy Spirit doesn't care about the illusion. Holy Spirit cares about waking you up to who you really are. And Holy Spirit cannot do that if you remain dependent on the ego for making your decisions. Okay? So the only way to get you away from believing that the ego is who you are and being fully attached to the ego is for what we call, by the way, we're the only ones who call it the Holy Spirit, just so you know. That's just a term. Right? If you go to India or China or any place else, they don't call it Holy Spirit, but they talk about the same voice. Okay? They have all different names for it, depending on the religion. But everybody's talking about the same thing. You know what I mean? The same intuition, voice, guidance. So Holy Spirit is just a term that comes from our culture. Okay? So that voice, that guidance system, that intuition, in order to guide us back into our truth, it has to guide us away from our dependency on an attachment to the false self, which means it has to be willing to guide us in even the mundane everyday things like what to put on, you know, what to eat, as I was saying today at lunch, when to mow the lawn, everything. And you can learn to just tune into that intuition. And at least in my experience, one of the first things I started noticing about it, because again, I was a smart, intelligent person. I could order my day. I could figure out what my priorities were and what should be done when. I mean, anybody who's not an idiot can do that. But that was one of the first things I was asked to turn over. I was asked to let go of ordering my own day and just ask for guidance. What am I to do now? What am I to do now? And one of the things that was a little bit difficult for me was at that time I was still attached, and I thought I did have my priorities straight. I thought I did know what needed to be done when, and it would guide me in other directions. Like maybe I thought I should be over here. You know, maybe I thought it was more important that I pay the bills. You know, I'd be paid. And the voice is telling me to go take a walk or to go mow the lawn or to, you know, like, that's not as important as this, you know. But, of course, it needed to undo me, right? It needed to undo me. And what I learned is I decided just to go with it, just trust it, let it order my day. Little miracle coincidences started to pop up. You know, like I would just be in the right place when somebody would show up or just be available when a phone call came in. And if I had ordered my day my way, I would have been busy then and not wanted to be on that phone call, right? And so enough little coincidence miracles began to show up that I began to realize this unknown thing that is ordering my day actually does know better than me, right? But I would never find that out if I didn't trust it and try it. And in the beginning, you got to understand, the doubt was huge. It was kind of a just do it anyway, you know, like the Nike commercial. Because I really did think I knew better. I really did. Yeah. But I did it anyway, and then I learned, it knows. It knows way better. Yeah. And this, again, these are the kinds of simple changes we can make. If they feel tough, they're only tough because of resistance. Again, it's not actually asking you to jump out of an airplane, you understand. It's just saying, hey, I'd rather you mow the lawn now instead of do your dishes now. And the funny thing is the resistance. You know, Donna and I joked about this. If we already have it in our head, no, I want to go check the mail now, and the guidance says, you know, do the dishes now, you'll feel us, but I want to check the mail. And then at some point you're like, what does it matter? You know, why am I holding on so much to my wanting to check the mail when the guidance is to go do the dishes and leave the mail in the mailbox for a little longer? And what you start to realize is you really are attached to ordering your day. That's the bottom line, which means you're attached to the ego. It's not even important. Even your own common sense knows it's not important. So why not do it the way the intuition is telling you to? So letting go of judgment, which means letting go of decision making, which means letting go of even things like ordering our day.
I have a little example about this.
Okay, should I sit next to you for the recording, Ruby? Go ahead with your example.
You know, I was trying to understand, there is a chapter in the course about decisions. You know, it's called, what is it called?
Rules for Decision.
The Rules for Decision. I never got that, and I still don't get it, but anyway. So I was experimenting with the rules of decision thing, and it said something about, you know, do what you want to do. So this was in 2010, maybe close just when I was started, doing Regina's stuff, and I was in Arizona, and I was separated from my husband, and we were thinking about doing a divorce. And so there was a Course in Miracles student called Jan. She's the head of she was doing Course in Miracles for 20 years. So she called me and said, Ruby, there's, you know, this friend of ours who is a blues singer. She's also a Course in Miracles student. She has a great band. It's going to be playing at this place. Would you like to come? I said, okay, I'm going to do the rules of decision. And I said, well, what do I really want to do? I want to sit here and read my book. I want to read NTI. You know, I just really wanted to, you know. So I said, yeah. I said, no, Jan, I don't think I want to go. I just want to, you know, stay here and be silent or be reading, whatever. She said, okay. So then I hung up and I started reading, and then
I said, oh, let me just ask the Holy Spirit what he would like for me to do. So I said, okay, Holy Spirit, would you go to Janet? And it also said, ask your ex-husband, too. And I didn't want to do that. So I said, really? I thought I was supposed to go and read, and, you know, Susie knows about me, wanting to read and be silent and be, you know, holy. And Spirit told me, my guidance said, to go to the group and invite George. So I invited George, and we had a blast. We had a great time. And it's kind of reminded me of Jacqueline Singh about her being a judge and how she thought that, you know, being holy was, if you'd like to explain that, because I thought that was a great explanation. So, you know, what tells me is that you don't know. You think you know. And even trying to be holy is not what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to sometimes be going to a dance.
You don't know what holy is, though.
Yeah, right. So anyway, that's...
Well, which, you know, reminds me of when Jesus talks in the Course about the one that knows, you know, the past, the present, and the future. And so, you know, if you're following that guidance, they know who might be there on that path at that time that they want you to meet or whatever.
Well, the way I was in the Air Force for 10 years, and what I think of it as is when you're the you know, the person in the field office, you just follow orders.
Yeah.
The general who has the big picture and has all the intelligence knows all the little pieces that need to be moved around, and you're taught never to question your orders. Because you don't know that story. You don't know why you're being asked to do this or this or this, but you trust the general. The general does know. It's really the same thing, you know. it's the same thing. We don't know why we're being asked to do things. And when we do get ideas in our mind about what we're supposed to be doing, that can block guidance. So it's best just to realize you don't know anything, to be absolutely open, and just keep asking. And again, let go of ordering your own day. So it looks like the next thing before I read it, I need to just tell you a little bit about what's in the Bible. I don't remember the details. I can remember the gist of it good enough, though. Jesus was teaching somewhere. Oh, he was teaching on a Sunday, I think. And I think that maybe even this might be the place where he and his apostles were hungry, and they walked through a wheat field, and they took some of the kernels of wheat out of the wheat field and rubbed it and were eating it, which counted as harvest, I guess, on Saturday, not Sunday. Sorry, Saturday, because that was the Sabbath. Yeah, on Sabbath. And so the Pharisees are watching, you know, Jesus healing people on Sabbath, harvesting wheat on Sabbath, and they see him as a sinner because he's breaking the law of Moses. Okay? So that's what's happening. And they then accuse him of, you know, they don't use the word sinner, but they accuse him of being against the law. So starting at sentence 7. Look at Jesus and at the Pharisees within these scriptures. Surely you notice that the Pharisees have learned rules on which they feel they can judge. But the Pharisees are only a symbol of what is within your mind. For you also have learned rules on which you believe you can judge. Did you judge the Pharisees as you read these stories? And by the way, most directly, he's talking to me, the scribe, and that's exactly what I did. They were judging Jesus, and I was judging them as I read the story for judging Jesus, right? Did you judge the Pharisees as you read these stories? On what rule did you base that judgment? Is there a belief in your mind that Jesus is more real, or more truth than the Pharisees? Did you think the Pharisees were wrong to judge Jesus? And that's what was going on in my mind. I said, Jesus is right. They should not judge him. They should listen to him, you know. And what Spirit is doing here is just pointing out you were sitting there judging them, you know, based on your rules and your logic. Nothing in the world is more real than anything else. This is why you know nothing and cannot judge. Your conscious experience is only of the world, and so you cannot know truth, which is not of the world. This is why I have come to you. I know truth, and I know the world that you believe and hold dear. I can lead you from the world to the truth if you will trust me and follow me. To trust and follow me, make no judgments along the way. Be as a little child, wide-eyed and curious, enjoying all that you seem to experience. Trust me to make your judgments for you. So again, if we're, you know, really, really, really surrendered, really, really practicing, what am I to do now? How am I to see this? How am I to respond? You know, with no agenda of our own, no thinking of our own, then there's actually a flow, and I'm sure everybody has experienced this to some degree. There's a flow that you get into where everything just fits. Everything just happens, and it's very, very easy. And in fact, from experience, what we learn is that being surrendered, although there may be resistance in the beginning, being surrendered is actually easier than having to make all of those decisions. And at some point, what happens is when you do start to slip back into thinking, at least in my case, it actually hurts because you got so much into the flow of just doing what the intuition said, and you get back to the thinking, you forgot how much strain there was up here. You're not used to it anymore. So now you feel a lot more. You feel immediately, oh, I'm thinking about this too much. I need to stop. Because there is a lot of strain in thinking. It's just when it's your habit, you don't notice the strain. When you lose the habit, you'll notice it. So that's it for today. So I think the main point then probably for us going into this next week would be to try to practice that surrender more, or listening to that intuition more, trying to get in touch with that still quiet voice, feel what you are to do instead of weighing options and thinking about what you are to do, right? And just try and tune in, start moving towards WGOD more from wherever you are now. There's always more. So shall we take our silence? I'll turn off the recorder.